G'day and welcome to Macca's Podcast. I love the scope of our program, anything and everything. If you want to get in touch with Australia, this is the place to do it. Settle back and join the Australian phone box. See you on the road.
Get on with it, Macca.
G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca, it's Leroy.
Hi, Leroy.
How are you, mate?
Yeah, good. What's happening?
I just, just give you a weather report, mate. I've just come out of Morgan, South Australia. I've been driving out here for about 8 years, and I've never seen it rain out here, and it's absolutely torrential.
So you're a truckie travelling from where to where, Leroy?
I come out here sometimes on the weekends for a bit of fun. I normally drive out of Sydney, a road train, out to Narendra and back to Sydney, but just for a bit of extra fun, I come out to, we do a Perth run, and I come out to Morgan on a Friday night, do a changeover, and back into Sydney. But, she's pretty wet out here.
Yeah, I've heard that right across, South Australia and the Territory, and they've already had some rain, so this will be flooding rain, I reckon.
Absolutely, yeah, it's wet. I'm just coming to Renmark now, and it's pouring in here as well, but yeah, just quite funny. They all say there it never rains. I've never seen rain in Morgan in 8 years going out there, but it's certainly getting the tanks filled up tonight.
Yeah, well, of course, people were calling me late last year in November, December about how dry it was in South Australia, and, that's the thing, and now here's the flooding rain. You know, Dorothea McKellar, I keep quoting it, I've been for years, but I mean, she was right on the money, and we don't seem to get rain. And they talk about Ireland and the lovely rolling hills of Ireland and this and the soft, gentle rain in the evening, and you know, and then whatever. We get it in buckets, or we don't have anything.
Yeah, it's right.
I reckon there'll be a lot of roads blocked out around your way, Leroy, this morning.
Yeah, well, we're all right so far. We're just coming back along the Sturt, back up to Sydney, and so far so good, Macca. But it was pretty, there was a bit of water on the road around about Euston, the other side of Mildura, coming out yesterday. So we'll see what it looks like over there.
Are you enjoying life on the road, Leroy?
I love it, Macca. It's great, yeah. Yeah, as I say, I normally drive a road train out of Sydney, just down to Narendra and back every night. I've got a smaller version of my truck on the weekend, and I take it out here occasionally for a bit of fun. It's good. I do love it, mate. It's a great job, yeah. It's good fun.
And it's great to see, you know, it's sometimes it's terrible for whoever, but it's great to see a natural phenomenon like really torrential rain. You can't believe it. You know, you sit there and you think, you're just a small little pebble in this huge world, this huge planet, and it is pouring down, or then you see, you know, high winds or a bushfire, the remnants of or storms or drought, and you think, wow, it's just, that's the great thing, isn't it, of life, I reckon, when you see something happening and you think, God, look at that, look at that.
Yeah, well, I got out to Morgan yesterday at about 1 p.m. and it was 32 degrees, sunny, no chance of rain. And then, this morning, absolutely bucketing down.
Keep in touch, Leroy. Great to talk to you, mate.
Thanks, Macca. Nice to chat. See you, mate.
Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Morning, Macca. This is Andrew. How are you doing this morning?
Good, thanks, Andrew.
Just wanted to call in and put a bit of a shout-out to all my mates who are returning from the World Championships up in Brisbane, sailing competition, the fin class. We've been up there for the last 3 weeks, or nearly 4 weeks, sailing a series of regattas, but competitors from all around the world converged on Moreton Bay, and we're all exhausted and we're all heading home. So I just wanted to call out to my mates heading there, driving back to Perth, leaving Moree this morning, I think, and the other guys, West Wyalong, are heading through to Adelaide, and I've just left Holbrook on my way back to Melbourne. There was 108 of us, all from all over the world. It was great.
Yeah, what a great thing to do. The journey's over and back, they're good, and the sailing, I'm sure that was wonderful. What, did you say fin class?
Yeah, international fin class.
What's that? What's that for the rest of us?
Oh, look, it's a lot of people don't know that sailing's in the Olympics, and since 1952. This little single-handed, it's only 14 feet long. We still measure boats in feet, but 14 feet long. This class has been the Olympic class since 1952, but unfortunately, for all sorts of political reasons, it's a big boys boat. You want to be over 100 kilos to push them around the course. And because of gender balance in the various classes, not too many women sort of qualify for that. Mm. So they've booted us out. And so after Japan, we didn't get to go to Paris. But the class is still amazingly strong. You get at the Worlds in Europe, you go over 300 boats. But out here, we had over 100, we had 108 boats from 16 countries.
And where are you this morning, mate?
I just left Holbrook.
And have you seen any rain down there? No.
Just a few dots yesterday. Coming through the back of Sydney yesterday, it was torrential, but it was in and out in like 40 minutes. But this morning, clear skies and 24 degrees.
Well, you've had a great week or two. That's a lovely thing to do, to travel somewhere and meet people from all over the world. I love rowing championships and sailing championships. People have got, other lives as well as sailing. What do you do?
Oh, look, I'm a psych. So, it's a busman's holiday hanging out with my mates.
All right, mate. Lovely to talk to you, Andrew. Good on you, mate.
Absolute privilege, Macca. Have a great day.
See you, mate. Tracy's back of Bairnsdale, is that right, Trace?
Yes, back of Bairnsdale below the Salyards. On the morass. Yeah, you should see that. You might be able to hear the birds. I can't send you any photos, but the sky, they say a red sky in the morning is a shepherd's warning. Mm. But we never get rain here. It always blows around Bairnsdale. And the sky's spectacular. It's like unbelievable. I photograph most mornings and most nights for about 5 years. And, I occasionally get something like, I really believe, spirit or God or whatever sends these mornings. They're just uplifting. They're just amazing.
Yeah, I know people who take a photo of the sunset or the sunrise too, and they're uplifting. And but it just, again, we were talking to Leroy about, when you see something like a huge, you caught a downpour and you just stop because the rain is just unbelievable. It's just anything, but it can be a lovely still morning where you watch the sun and it's nothing's happening, but it is happening. And you're part of it, Trace.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been in one of those recently in Gippsland, and you have to stop your car because it's so dangerous you can't see anything. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Anything else to report, Trace?
No, just the magpies and the kookaburras are out here. I've got the dingo, which is my Kelpie sheepdog. No sheep, so I'm worn out. And all is good in the wood. And the Painesville boat, old ancient boat show's on. So that's pretty incredible. I'm going to go back again today. The food was spectacular.
How long's that on for? Just the weekend, is it all?
Friday, Saturday, and today. Yeah, it's worth going to, everyone. It's fantastic. And really, the food, everything, it's a lot of fun. You can't get a park, though. There's a million people in Painesville.
That's the trouble. When anything's popular, you can't get a park. And it's like going to a restaurant that's really good or something. You can't get a park. You got to walk for miles. So I often think it's best to stay home and cook something up yourself, Trace.
I totally agree. I'm with you on that one. Yep. Okay, thank you. And I'm so good to have your program back. I haven't heard you for quite some time, so I felt very excited. So thank you. I think it's a great program. Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy. Good on you.
Bye-bye.
See you, bye. Guys in Swan Point, good morning, Guy.
Good morning, Macca. You're looking well.
Thank you, mate. That's very nice of you to say that. I've just had a makeover. That's what you're referring to, obviously.
That's it. Mm. Yeah, it's 26 and showers, I reckon, but I doubt the showers.
You're dry in Tassie, aren't you?
Yeah, I've got a lake in my backyard that's probably a metre down than normal.
A lake in your backyard. Yeah. How good's that?
Mm.
Full of fish and stuff?
No, it's a bit bracken and whatever for fish. It's got lots of ducks and stuff, though. Yep.
What else can you tell me, Guy?
I heard you earlier mention Anzac Day. And I wanted to let the people know that there's another important Remembrance Day 3 days later on the 28th of April, which is Workers' Remembrance Day.
Tell me.
Well, in my mind, we don't seem to give the worker enough credit. We don't put him on a high enough pedestal. We have Anzac Day, and we should, and we do, but we forget about our workers. There's 188 killed so far this year in Australia. It's over three a week, week after week after week, and we tend not to remember them. And I've had the first of its type workers' remembrance park built in Launceston recently, and we need to remember them. People don't seem to realise that our workforces give us our lives and freedoms, but our armed forces give us our lives and freedoms, but our workforce gives us all the tools to live those lives and freedoms, and they also lay their life down for us.
Well, you won't get any argument from me, Guy. I realised the importance of a good bus driver, a good anybody, a carer, those things. They're the most important things, really, mate. It's all very well the airy-fairy things of the world and that academics and people want to talk about, but really the important things are the down-to-earth things, that whether you can get some care and some food and all those sort of things that are brought to you by people who just get on their way and do their job every day. And good on you. Yeah. So you've got a monument, what, in the park in Lonnie?
Yeah, it's not so much a monument. It's a park connected to our AFL stadium, Aurora Stadium, and it's got some beautiful coloured gantries through it and a meandering path and bricks along the side of the path where you can apply and have a plaque put in there for your loved one where their names will be remembered forever. And we have a service there the 28th of April each year, and you can get a free coffee and an egg and bake a bun at the service. And we give thanks to those that we love and that have given us so much.
And what do you call it?
It's the Workers' Commemorative Park in Launceston. And you Google my name or that name and you can find a lot about it. It's been a project of mine for about 12 or 15 years now.
Now, is the 28th of April, is that regarded as a national day? No, we have a day. We have a day for everything now, you know, Cat Day and, you know, World Bunion Day and World Cabbage Day. Yeah. But this sounds...
It is.
The 28th of April is...
Yeah, it's a national day in the Western world. It's Workers' Remembrance Day. It has been for a long time.
Okay, good on you, mate. And thanks. Yeah. I'll have a look at that next time. Time I get to Lonnie, I'll have a look at it. Today's National Cleanup Day, of course. It's World Hearing Day on Tuesday, World Prayer Day on Friday, International Women's Day next Sunday. But the 28th of April is Workers'
Remembrance Day.
Workers' Remembrance Day.
Yeah, I just have this drive to lift the profile of the worker. We forget about him too easy, and we shouldn't.
No, exactly. Good on you, mate.
He's a very important person.
I'll say. Thanks, Guy. Right. Good on you.
All right. Thank you, Macca.
See you. Bye. Good day. This is Macca.
Good morning, Macca.
Morning.
Good morning. It's Lucy here from Port Pirie. I wanted to tell you something really special that happened on Thursday morning.
Tell me.
We go swimming in the morning, some of us old people, at Solomon Town Beach. And there was a ripple in the water about 2 feet from us.
Oh, dear.
And I said, just watch out. There could be a shag there. And up popped this little dolphin. And some of the other people didn't believe me. But there he was just hanging around. And then between the two groups of people, up jumped the mother, did a big arch in the water and a big splash and the... around us, and you could have just touched it, but we didn't. But we just enjoyed it, and it kept looking at us and like it was going to round us up like a fish.
Is that that's obviously unusual at Port Pirie, is it, to see dolphins that far up?
No, we do get them in the river, and in January, sometimes the mothers come there with their babies. And last year we had one there, and that had a tiny baby, and it was doing zoomies right on the edge of the water. It was really neat. So, you know, you don't have to go to overseas to swim or special places. Our beach is not really that good, but it's got dolphins and you don't have to pay.
Well, that's wonderful, Lucy. It'd be a lovely thing to see. And how's swimming go for you every morning? That'd be good. You must be fit.
Oh, yes, it is. I've been going for a few years now. And
saltwater therapy.
Yeah. You always feel better after the seawater.
I'll say. All right. Good on you, Lucy. Great to talk to you.
Thank you. I enjoy it. And for 100 years, nearly 100 years, I've been listening now. So you must be 120. Good morning.
Some mornings Bye. I feel like that. Good on you, Lucy. See ya.
See ya.
Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Yeah. Hello, Macca. Chris speaking.
Hi, Chris.
Look, I'm thought you've never got a phone call from Ushuaia in Argentina, so I thought I'd just make a quick call.
No, you're our first, Chris, and from Ushuaia.
Oh, that's good to know. I didn't think I'd heard anybody from Ushuaia. It's going to be a short call because we're having our safety briefing very, very shortly. So just a quick weather report. It's 9-10 degrees, cold southwesterly wind blowing, overcast, and apparently that's pretty normal here in Ushuaia most of the year.
And what's the safety rundown you're having?
Oh, so we're on a small cruise ship heading down to Antarctica. It's an 11-day, 10-night trip. And so we just got on board about an hour ago, and we've got to learn how to put on survival suits and other things, I think. But I can tell you in a couple of weeks' time when I get back to Oz.
Where are you from in Oz?
I'm the cycling correspondent from Flying Fish Point near Innisfail.
I think you're leaving. It's live radio. You hear it all here, kids. So Chris, you're heading to Antarctica, so you fly into Argentina and then go from there. Is that the story?
That's correct. Yeah, I think that was the sample of the noise that we're going to hear. I've got to go.
Yeah, all right. Nice to talk to you, Chris.
Okay, thanks, Macca. See you later.
Bye. Oh, they have those things like you have in lifts and stuff. That morning, Simon. isn't that quite interesting? I listened to you. Says now, this comes from our archive. I listened to you. I'm 7 years old, and you talked to my grandma, Dixie Knott, some time ago when she sent you an email about using old urea bags because of their lovely cotton, and I think she saved the cotton, the bags, the urea bags, and it was made of lovely cotton. You said that you loved the name Dixie, and I just thought you'd be interested to know that I'm her granddaughter, and I'm called Bean, B-E-A-N. They called me Charlie when I was born. This is a seven-year-old writing this. They called me Charlie when I was born, but I decided to change it when I was two. What's in a name? We'll talk about that more later. I decided to change my name when I was two, and now everybody is trained. Cop this from a seven-year-old, but was two. Now everyone's trained to call me Bean. It goes good with Eager, my surname. So my name is Bean Eager. Eager Bean, little Eager Bean. That's what people used to call you. Oh, you're a little Eager Bean, aren't you? Bean Eager. Oh, dear. I don't know. Our number's 1300 700 222. G'day, this is Macca.
Hey, good morning, Ian. Macca, it's Lyndon here.
Hi, Lyndon.
I'll just let you know about rainfall here in South Australia. We live at Wellington East near Taylor Bend. We've had virtually no rain at all. It's that bloody dry. I'm looking for adjustment for my pet sleepy lizard.
And Leroy rang us first thing this morning and said he hadn't seen so much rain, and he was round Morgan and Renmark, I think, and there'd been torrential rain.
Yeah, no, we've missed out. We didn't get any last weekend either. So, it's that dry here. I did a post hole here a few weeks ago and went down about 3 feet, and it's just bone dry. It is a dry area, only 12-inch rainfall here, but we're only getting about 4 inches of rain a year during the growing period. But it's still it's early enough. It's too early for an opening anyhow. So hopefully we'll get rain in a month's time or so, but it'll help with the moisture down. you know, down below for later on.
Yeah, and when you're sowing around when April, something around that, April, May?
Yeah. May. So, but no, she's dry. I've got a sister at Tumby Bay and she had 30 mil yesterday, and I've got a friend at Snowdown, he had 30 mil as well, but it just won't come this way.
Torrential rain in some parts of South Australia, and of course up in the territory, and they've had a lot of rain, and even more coming, I think. And they're maybe more. I don't know if you've looked. I haven't looked at the charts, but people say there's more rain around for the territory and parts of South Australia. So maybe you'll get some, Lyndon. Let's hope.
Yeah,
eh?
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter much. We're only a little hobby farmer nowadays, but the radar is it's all gone now, so but there's nothing coming, so anyway, it doesn't matter, it'll rain later on. It's never not rained, has it?
Exactly, it's never not rained.
I come out of Sydney the other week back through Cobar and Wilcannia, and the bloody kangaroos are that skinny up there. I was following another truck for a little while, and as the truck went past, this kangaroo fell over. That's how poor they are up there, poor buggers. Oh, it's not good. But anyway, it's good for the station country and all that sort of thing. So there's some good come out of it, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'll say. Lyndon, you just got a hobby farm there, did you say, at Tarlin Bend?
Yeah. I've retired now. And we I'm a butcher by trade, now the farm down the southeast, because we all own meat and that sort of thing.
Mm.
But no, it's just at 40 acres now. And that's too much for me now. I'm getting too bloody old. So.
Yeah, well, it takes a lot to look after. Even a backyard block takes a lot to look after. So, you know, I can imagine 40 acres. How do you keep the – you got some goats or something like that?
We've got sheep here. But I've had a lot of operations, knees, backs and that sort of thing. So we're selling up this year and going to travel around Australia.
Yeah, the price of sheep is going to go through the roof, I believe.
Yeah. No, she's pretty bloody high now. They made nearly $500 at Wagga the other day.
Yeah, and it'll only go up. Price of everything, the price of food. The price of food is unbelievable, Lyndon. They talk about, I don't know, they talk about inflation. I don't think they really know what it is, you know. They have a basket of goods, but I'm not sure that they know, really.
No, they definitely don't. The boss of the Reserve Bank said a few months ago she didn't know what the price of fuel was.
Mm.
Well, you know, that's pretty bloody bad, isn't it, when someone's setting interest rates, don't know what the costs are. But anyway.
And the cost, I'll tell you what, it's going up as well. The cost of insurance for cars and everything, and also car repairs, like if you want to repair your car, they just seem to have gone up. I don't know. It just seems to have gone up 30, 40, 50, you know, depends. You don't know with a car, really, do you? When he says, oh, your thing has fallen off and you're... this is needs doing. You just have to take their word for it. But you know, like everybody else in business, they're faced with the same costs for all sorts of things, for electricity and fuel and everything they buy. So and that's why inflation is such a two-edged sword, and people don't realise. And your value, as the bloke said last week, and he wrote to me. Your money seems to be not worth what it was, you know.
No.
I don't know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago.
There's local mechanic here charges $188 a bloody hour, which is, I've always done all my own work, but now I can't sort of thing. But there's so much difference. You've got to look around. The mechanic in Murray Bridge is $120 an hour.
Yep.
You know, so you just got to look around for everything. And but anyway, that's life, isn't it?
That's life. All right, mate, good on you. Thank you.
All the best. Catch you.
Thanks, Bye-bye. Lyndon. Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Oh, hi, Macca. Love your show. I'm Bruno, and I'm driving from Adelaide to the harbour, where we're both, my older brother, Lello, we're off on our way to Victor Harbour to play golf. We're very we're braving the weather. At the moment, we're going through a very foggy, beautiful countryside, and hopefully the rain will stay away. They forecast up to 50 mils, but we can still play golf in the 50 mils.
I know. You're tragic, you golfers. Not bloody golf again. That's what she said. Bruno, you're playing where? At Victor Harbour, did you say?
Yeah, we play at Victor Harbour. We're both members of the Italian Golf, South Australia Italian Golf Club. And, yeah, we play once a month at different courses. And today's Victor Harbour. It's actually we're playing for a cup, the Mariotti Cup, which is named after one of our members who passed away, unfortunately. So, yeah, we have a lot of fun. We've got about 168 members. And normally we get up to 68 players that go out on Sundays every once a month or so, and we have a lot of fun.
The Italian Golf Club. Where are you from, Bruno? Where do you live?
There was six in my family, and three of us were born in Italy. I was born in southern Italy, and then Sinopoli in Italy, and three of them. We're born here. We call them the kangaroos. We're the younger siblings. So yeah, we came out when I came out of 55, something like that. Yeah. And,
you're breaking up. You're breaking up a bit, Bruno. You're driving. Are you still?
Yeah, is this better?
Yeah, that's better. It's a lot better.
Yeah, that's better, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I was on hands-free, so Lello could hear. I was going to tell you how much more handsome I am than my brother, and how much of a better golfer I am. But
so what do you do? What do you do? What does the family do for a living, Bruno? What did you do?
I'm a GP, and my brother Lello's an architect, and then we've got a dentist and a engineer.
That's
and
what
an
I need.
And a lawyer in the family. So
you got it all covered.
We've got it all covered. We can design your house, build it, look after your medical, dental, and legal bill problems.
All you need is a psychologist now, really, Bruno? Yeah.
I'm a psychologist as well, doctor psychologist. All GPs are psychologists, mate.
I know, you've got to be, haven't you? Well, everybody's got to be. It's like your mother. They're all psychologists. They all look after you, Bruno. Enjoy you. And you call it? It's called the Italian Golf Club.
South Australia Italian Golf Club. What there's a South Australia Italian Golf Club, Victorian, New South Wales, Queensland, and Perth Italian Golf Clubs, and every year we play in a different city. So about 130 golfers play. Last year we played in Brisbane. This year it's in Perth, and we have a two-day tournament, and then we alternate cities. So it's quite good fun, a lot of fun.
I'll say, Bruno, just tell me. There's been reports here on the in the eastern states, news about measles and the number of cases they're finding with measles. I don't know. Do people get inoculated against measles still, or?
Do people get inoculated? They should get inoculated, certainly. We've had a couple of cases in my clinic in the last 2 weeks, as a matter of fact. So, yeah, you have to keep vigilant and make sure your vaccinations are up to date practice good isolation techniques if you're in contact with anyone.
Yeah, it's a lot like that for everything, isn't it? It was the same thing for COVID and things like that. But Bruno, good luck. What's your handicap, Bruno?
My handicap is golf, but no. one day I play like an A grader, the next day I play like a D grader. So a handicap currently is about 24, I think. But I hope to bring it down.
All right, mate. Good on you. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
See you. This is the All Over News. This is the All Over News, and heaps of flooding rains in the Northern Territory and South Australia in this summer of rain and bushfire and drought, you name it. Around Lake Nash Station in the Northern Territory, they had over 550 mils one weekend and 350 mils falling in a single night. No longer Lake Nash, now Ocean Nash. In praise of electric vehicles, Steve Pronk says, I've just driven my EV from Brisbane to Perth and back with zero issues. Charging stations all the way, and these continue, faster charging rates and more charging stations. Battery life continues to improve, and the Toyota Prius has been the hybrid of choice for taxis for decades. Early EVs, my first was in 2014, suited early adopters like myself. No different to when Henry Ford sold his first cars. From the perspective of EV suppliers, China today is no different to Japan in the 1960s, says Steve. The build quality is very good. The software is not as good. The US EV manufacturers still make better software. Battery replacement is very uncommon today, and with continuous development, batteries could last a million miles. From Shane Tully, Macca, the lights ruining the night sky, becoming a problem in our little Southern Highlands community. We used to be dark and cosy, now the night sky has a glow. Turn the lights off would be a good start. Street lights shine when no one needs them. My pleasure is to make a cuppa to listen to you at 5:30, open the curtains and sit up in bed and watch the morning dawn. But more and more unneeded lights are wasting electricity and energy. Maybe an email read out by you might encourage people to turn off lights and give our night sky back to those who love the stars, says Shane from Mittagong. It's a forlorn hope, I think, Shane. We're putting more and more people into the place and they'll all have to live somewhere and they all turn the lights on. This is the All Over News, and years ago it was common, says Richard Cantwell, for everyone as soon as possible in the morning to purchase the daily newspaper and read from cover to cover as the day went by. Loaded trucks with newspapers headed in every direction to deliver all over cities and country towns. Nothing was as fulfilling reading a story and heading back to the story to finish after being sidetracked by work or other disturbances. At the end of the day, it was a feeling of daily achievement and necessity finishing the daily newspaper. So many talented journalists. Unfortunately, the number of journalists is falling and the daily newspaper is more difficult to obtain. News agents are no longer the earliest openers in the local shops. Isn't that interesting? News agents are no longer the earliest openers in the local shops. Social media is destroying news by taking stories from legitimate news outlets and mashing the story, making it readable and understood in a flippant way with no depth. Foreign-controlled social media organisations should pay for what they're taking. An arbiter should decide what they pay, says Richard. We may not be able to return to the days of top-quality news. We must also protect our local rag, which is vital to the happenings locally, the news about the local council and the local community. We should be able to know about our local tradespeople, what's happening, and where groups can gather, and services that are required. Catching trains or buses today, you see few people opening the newspaper. Most scan their phones, reading stories, or see what they can buy over the internet. Reading in any form is a vital part of living, and heaven help us if the dreaded AI makes too much of a footprint into society. The robots will take over. Keep up the good work. That's a scary thought, Richard. This is a letter. Dear Ian, says Alan Hale, after listening to your program Sunday the 22nd about emu on the menu, I was aghast. I thought I might tell you about an experience I had recently with a emu. While driving into our property, 100 acres in the Snowy River, I noticed a bundle of black and white stripes in the middle of the track. An adult emu and two chicks were standing by, and as I got closer, they appeared to get excited, so I slowed down and finally got out of the car to see. It was an emu chick with a dislocated leg, so it couldn't run away. I quickly scooped it up and put it inside my jacket and continued on my way. I made a quick phone call to the wildlife carer in Delegat, who I now call the Emu Whisperer, and she advised me to come in. When I got there, she already had an emergency pack made up. And after a quick look, she said, he'll be all right. Just keep him in a cardboard box with a hot water bottle and a few towels. Bring him back in a week to see if he's going to make it. You've got a hard slog for 14 months until he can fend for himself. Thus began my journey with Edward, named because he was third in line. I put him on the lounge room floor in a banana box, where he immediately put his head on the floor, lifted his bum up and let fly with a runny poo onto the carpet. Fun, fun, fun. After 1 week, I travelled back into Delegat, and she was delighted to see him. And even though he stumbled around, he was definitely on the mend. He loved to snuggle into my jacket, so I was able to go shopping, but he would not shut up and exposed me to a lot of photo sessions. Oh my God, an emu. Can I take a photo? Everyone wanted a photo. I never told the carer that he slept on my tummy in bed, which saved me a refill of a water bottle at 3 a.m. My wife was in Taiwan on family business, so it was just me and Edward 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. His leg came good after 2 weeks and he could run in 4 weeks. I was always afraid he'd take off if I let him go outside. If only I had known. The male emu looks after the chicks for 14 months and the carer laughed as I told her this. He will stick with you like glue. She was right. He followed me everywhere, like a kelpie pup. One day I was cutting firewood with a chainsaw and a frame, sitting on a stool as I did, and after 3 or 4 pieces cut, I looked for Edward. Nowhere to be seen. I stood up, called his name, and noticed a pile of sawdust move. He stood up between my legs and looked at me and said, "What are we up to next, Dad?" He was completely invisible under the sawdust. He grew at an amazing rate, almost doubling in size every week. One time I had to drive to Cooma, a 2.5-hour drive, to pick up groceries at Woolies. Couldn't get him in the jacket, too big, so I put him in the back of the ute, which had a canopy and windows, and a lift-up back. I parked at the Woolies pickup, waiting, and the lady walked past, stopped at my car to search for something in a handbag, and she had 2 twin 5-year-old girls and a young boy with her. And one of the girls looked up and saw Edward in the back of the ute and said, "Excuse me, mister, there's a chook in your ute." I smiled and went to the back of the ute and said, "That's not a chook, it's an emu chick." The little girl leapt onto the tow bar in front of me and reached in and grabbed Edward by the neck. I thought Edward would go berserk, but she pulled his head up to her cheek and scratched him behind the ears. Whenever you do that, he just collapses into a pile, which he did. The little girl turned her attention to me. "Where did you get him, mister?" And then, "What are you going to do with him?" I said, "Well, when he gets old enough, I'll let him go and he will find himself a girlfriend and she'll probably have eggs and maybe someday he'll come back and visit me with his chicks." "They come from eggs?" the little girl asked. "Yes," I said. "They lay eggs the size of my hand and I made a ball shape to show." "I want one," she exclaimed. She was only 5 years old and I'd only met her 5 minutes ago. "When can I see one?" I was saved by the bell. My order was called and the mother plucked her off the tow bar, minus Edward. Thank God for that. My wife came back from Taiwan and immediately fell in love with Edward. And after all my care and attention for him, the little beggar fell in love with her, followed her everywhere she went. He never ceased to amaze us as he would tear around the house, sometimes jumping in the air and doing a karate kick. He would run so fast around the house that he would lean over at 45 degrees and go around the corners. Sometimes I would hide and jump out in front of him and he would shriek and go into what we called his emu dance. He was one happy emu. After 5 months, he was 4 foot tall and a struggle to put him in the back of the ute. We'd promised to do a house sit for some friends who own a large homestead, all fenced off and safe for an emu. They also had a very old, retired seeing eye dog. But when we arrived complete with emu, they immediately became best friends, followed each other around everywhere. The dog's name was Cooper, and he and Edward played together on the grass, posed for photographs, and generally made our stay of 3 months very enjoyable. "Sorry for the long letter, Ian. It was only supposed to be one page," says Alan Hale, the only person to have rescued a monkey from Sydney Harbour. So there. Lovely story, Alan. And our emu obsession at the moment started really because one of our listeners, a bloke called Ian Timmins, sent me some of his songs. He'd written the words, and they're quite good, really good. And I especially like the emu one and the one he wrote about the program. And then last week, Gordon and Rosemary were out driving the Kidman, dodging emus, and they told us, well, I think their terrible story about roadkill and emus, and that obviously prompted Alan to send his little story about the emu chick. And it's a lovely story, isn't it? There's something about emus, they look, I suppose it's that inquisitive look they have, it makes you think they're quite bright. And obviously after Alan's story, yeah, they are quite bright. They bond with humans really well, make great pets. Don't try it at home. As for Alan's monkey story, I remember it. It was something about monkeys escaping from a zoo somewhere. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. This is Professor Anne Tiedemann from the University of Sydney. I spoke to you last year and I wanted to say thanks to you for having me on your program to talk about the Active Women Over 50 research project that we're doing at the university.
Oh, right. I sort of remember. Don't remember all the details, Anne, but I remember you came and talked about that.
We had a nice chat and we put a call out for people to express interest in signing up to the research project, and we got about 200 callers reaching out to us. So we were like blown away. It was fantastic. There was a lot of interest. We've almost completed our recruitment for the project. We've got about 100 spots left, so I wondered if people still might be interested in getting in contact and signing up to get some help.
Well, explain again to people what you're looking for.
Yeah, so this is a research project focused on giving women age 50 plus support to become more physically active. So it's New South Wales wide, and the support is a remotely delivered behaviour change support program. It gives, first of all, some goal setting from a research physiotherapist. We then look at some health coaching calls to help them work out, you know, how to fit physical activity into their busy lives. They then receive motivational messages via text or email, and there's a tailor-made website for them to receive information and see motivational videos of other women who've managed to become more active. And then finally, we have a Facebook group that they can join to share their ideas and create a bit of a community around becoming more active.
Professor Ann, it seems like it should be a national survey, because I'm sure there's a lot of there always is. I mean, and especially people in rural Australia, but you know, also in cities, people living lives of quiet desperation. Yeah. You know, there's not a lot of contact in cities in lots of ways. You know, in some ways, country towns are a bit more connected, or can be, because they're used to looking after one another. But you move into a city and no one knows you. Even suburbs have changed since when I grew up.
That's so true.
Suburbs were community things with our families, and that's all changed. A lot of rented houses now, because people can't afford to buy, so they move in. They might stay for a year or 6 months, and then they're off, and somebody else comes in. So, yeah, that seems to me something that could spread Australia wide, Anne, because I know there's a lot of need, and people, as you get old and you're on your own too, or something like that, it's a hard battle, and we all need help.
We do. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it could be Australia-wide. At the moment, it's just a research project to basically assess if it's effective in increasing people's physical activity. But if we show it to work, then we'd be certainly advocating for funding from the government to roll it out throughout the country. We're really excited so far for the feedback that people are giving us. They're saying that they feel like it's really helpful. It's helping them to fit physical activity into their busy lives. You know, we know that women in this age group, they're juggling a lot. They've often got busy work. They're looking after family, and often they're looking after their parents as well. They're sometimes called the sandwich generation. So it's quite a battle to also look after their own health and their physical activity.
Exactly. And you're looking after children. You're looking after children all your life, really, it seems to me. Yeah?
Exactly.
It doesn't stop when they're 21 or 18. And
no,
just,
it doesn't.
They think, oh, I've got to look after mum and dad, but they've been looking after them for 50, 60 years. God help me.
Yes.
Anyway, so how do people get in touch, Anne?
Yeah, so we've got a website that they can go on to find out more information and to put in their details, and then we'll contact them. So the website is activewomenover50, and that's 50 the number, .org.au.
There you go.
That's activewomenover50.org.au.
And when you said you got a lot of response last time, where did the people come from? The city or
all
country
over,
or what?
All over the whole of the state. So we've had a lot of, we're trying to recruit 1,000 people altogether.
Wow.
And we're trying to get 500 from regional, rural and remote, and 500 from urban. So we've nearly filled our target for urban, but we really need more rural, regional and remote people from New South Wales.
All right. Well, good luck. And, nice to talk to you, Professor Ann.
Thanks so much, Macca.
What do you do on Sunday morning? Do you guys,
often I go for a run, actually.
Right.
Well, in the soccer season, I play soccer.
Oh,
so that's about to start soon.
Yes. It's good exercise too. I always think that playing sport is probably better than running, because I don't know, people enjoy running. I don't think I'd enjoy running, but just for its own sake. But if you're running around chasing a ball or something like that.
Great fun. And it's the group effect. It's the social effect as well, isn't it?
Yes, we're social animals. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, we are.
Thanks, Professor Ann.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Macca. Have a good day.
Good on you. Bye. My next guest is Georgina Topp. Have you ever heard of the Hilltop Hutch, Georgina?
I have.
Have you? Yeah. How come?
I just hear them around town.
They're pretty out there, aren't they? Anyway, it's interesting. The Hilltop Hoods, they're at Homebush. Gee, there's been some acts, hasn't there, in Australia.
They sure have.
In the last month, they come to Australia because they make a lot of money here. There's only a certain amount of money to go around in music. Look, it's Georgina Top, ladies and gentlemen. I work with Georgina, sort of. She's works around the place. She's she's in the technical area, and she's very switched on to AI and all that sort of stuff. But anyway, Georgina has just come back. We'll talk to her about it this morning. She's just come back from the Winter Olympics in a little place called
Bormio.
Bormio,
a small town in northern Italy, in the Italian Alps.
How high?
I think about 1,500 metres high.
So that's about, yeah, that's 3,000, 4,000 feet. So yeah, that's not that high. I thought it might be more. So it's in the Alps.
Yeah.
And they go across, yeah, the lovely Alps where Hannibal was years ago. And that was good?
Oh, it was, yeah, it was beautiful. It was a wonderful experience. The town of Bormio was just gorgeous. Mm. Just a small town. It's about 4,000 people. And they were hosting the men's alpine skiing events.
So what happens in a little town like that? Now, I assume there's not nearly as many people go to the Winter Olympics as the Summer Olympics. So what do they do about crowds there in a little town like Bormio?
Yeah, I think that's a challenge for the town to manage because they've only got a finite amount of guest houses and hotels. So, yeah, it is difficult. So people, I know some of my colleagues I was working with had to stay at other towns sort of further away from Bormio, so they had to get buses in every morning for work. So, yeah, it was a big logistics effort to make it work.
But as one of my mates said about something else, I forget what he was saying, and John Connolly last week talking about motor racing. He says, oh, I don't go because the 12-hour race was on in Bathurst last weekend. And he said, no, I don't go now. I watch it on TV because you get a better view. And I think, yeah, you get a much bit, like the bobsled and all that sort of stuff, you get a much better view, wouldn't you, on TV than you can get there, especially when the skis go past and they've gone.
Yeah, that's true. Like as a spectator, I suppose you only see part of the slope or the field. But they do have, like where I was working, they had a big grandstand set up with a big screen, so they would show, you know, the video feed of the skiers coming down the hill, and then you'd see them coming to the finish line at the end.
And what's it like for a little Aussie to go over there if it was cold every day, I suppose? Was it round freezing?
It was cold. It was, you know, below zero often, and we had a lot of snow, which was a novelty for me, so I loved it. It was really fun. But, it was cold. And we're just working with a really international crew, so, you know, you work with people from all over the world.
Exciting.
It's really nice meeting different people and, just learning about their work experiences, yeah.
And, well, everybody, that's the best part about doing something like that, isn't it? It's like going to a cricket, you know, thing or whatever, or playing, yeah. It's just learning how the other half. That's why I love Sunday morning here, because we get calls from all over the place. We just had a call a little while ago from, where was he? Chris in Ushuaia in Argentina.
Wow.
And he was just on his way to Antarctica. And he was on the boat, and then they had a safety thing and the horn was blowing and stuff. But it's nice to bump into people, isn't it, and from other places, because you'll never get to meet them. That's what life's all about, but you can't get around that much. But when you go to something, that's why I like to go to a surf carnival or something, Australian Surfing Carnival in the Gold Coast or in Western Australia, because they're from all over the place.
Yeah,
Everybody's in. Like they just had, where was that, the fin class on the Gold Coast? They just had a fin class sailing thing up there on the Gold Coast somewhere. No, Moreton Bay.
Mm-hmm.
But there's sailors from all over the world.
Yeah.
And they're all sorts of people, you know, they're all sorts of people in all sorts
people
of...
people you wouldn't normally bump into in your everyday life.
So it's a great thing. Yeah. Georgina Top is my guest this morning, and after the weather and news and stuff which is coming up, she'll tell you all about Italy. Because I always think it's great to get the point of view of an Oz who's suddenly parachuted into some place that they've never been before, and they say, gee... do you know that? Well, do you know that? Georgina will tell you all about that very shortly. How's things in Toowoomba, John?
Hey, Macca. Yeah, they're great, mate. You better come back and do another show for us, eh?
What, in the theatre or Empire. in the Empire? Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to. When was that? That was a while ago, wasn't it?
Oh, mate, it was a couple of years ago. I remember my wife saying to you when you said, I'll talk to you outside, you said, oh, he's a big man. He won't want to talk to you.
I'm not a big
man. And you went and got your microphone and we did an interview about prostate, I think.
Oh, there you go. Johnny, what are you up to this morning in Toowoomba?
Well, this morning I brought my phone along to take pictures, and then Lee rang And so I'm in the middle of the Peak to Park run, which is a 10-kilometre fitness run. This is the 20th year, and it goes from Picnic Point to Lake Annan, and there's 5,000 Toomborites here.
Wow.
Not bad out of 100,000.
Are you running or jogging or shuffling?
I'm jogging. I'm jogging. Mate, my sprint, they call it jog, so my jog is probably a shuffle, mate.
Yeah. Well, it's Peak to Park run, and what's that in aid of? Anything or just for?
Yeah, mental health this year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to think of the name of the mental health.
Black Dog or something.
It's not Black Dog. It's a local thing, and it was $40 an entry. They're going to make good money here.
Mm, well, it's good. Yes.
But, I'm going to say, that's not why I got in touch with you. I never thought you'd even read my email, mate, but good on you.
Well, Lee would have read it, and she would have told me about it. That's what how it would have happened, because we get a few here, Johnny.
Well, mate, I've just finished. I'm about your age, so I don't have to say how old I am.
No.
So I'm just finishing my career with a PhD.
Oh, really? And what in?
Well, I'm looking at the rights of young woman dying of breast cancer and driving a car.
Right.
Now, we know that the mortality rate, the fatalities in the road are going up, and the incidence of opioids in the autopsies has increased. So we know there's an issue with people using these drugs. But what got me was a number of young women came and said, you know, we want to stay involved in life. We've got two little kids or something. Can I do the school pickup? I'm taking these drugs. And nobody could tell them. And, you know, I'm supposed to be an expert in the field. So in the end, I sort of drew up a bit of a plan. And I said, well, when we go to court, I might be able to get you off. But these people are responsible, but nobody's talking to them about it, about what to do, how to judge whether they should drive or not. So I did a research. I interviewed their doctors, then their pharmacists, and then followed a group of 10 dying women for a year. Of course, two of them died in that year, but they're all driving and being very responsible, but only on their own deaths or what's happening. Nobody says anything to them. And that has to change, I think.
Well, exactly. And for everybody in this world, the car is just vital. And especially for older people, because otherwise they're just limited, you know. And I think there needs to be a rethink, you know. Once you get to, I think, 70 or 75, you have to redo your license or whatever, or get a doctor's clearance and all that sort of stuff. But the fatalities and the accidents with cars and you know, every time there was a bloke, somebody at 90 the other day was involved in a car accident or something, and they reported on the news. But all the accidents happen, you know, all the it seemed with road safety, I get a big thing about driving and road safety. All the carnage that happens is young kids, people who aren't licensed, people driving unregistered cars, people who are on drugs, all those sort of things. I haven't done the stats, but I just have a feeling in my water that if you did the stats, older people would not figure nearly as highly as that, especially with carnage. And I can understand people who are, you know, you don't have your car when you're 70 or 75. You're virtually isolated.
Exactly. And you can imagine in our society, we say, oh, you're dying. You're 50, you're dying. You're in palliative care. And we promise you to live your life to the fullest, but we're going to take your license off you and knock back your freedom and independence.
Yeah. John,
you've got to be careful about doing that sort of thing.
Yeah, John, now you've done your PhD in what's it called?
Well, it's the views and practices and perceptions and attitudes of breast cancer women with advanced cancer to driving and how they make decisions and who influences those decisions. That's the doctors and pharmacists.
You're a doctor, John?
Yes, I'm an old bush doctor. Mm. And then I came as an old man and specialised in palliative care, did another three training 3 years of training when I was 52.
And you saw this in your practice, of course, and you thought...
Oh, yeah, yeah. This... People show up, you know, on a heap of opioids, which we know cognitively impairs you, and they'd say, oh, by the way, Doc, no one's told me where they can drive on this. They've driven to see me. What are my rights? And there's a huge hole there.
Yeah. Well,
I've got two papers already published, Macca, but I think the general public have got to have a say in this sort of thing.
Yes.
This is about community rights and community safety.
Yeah, well, and see, and it's usually individuals such as you, and I don't know, but more power to you, mate. What? So how can we?
I reckon if ABC, I did send something to ABC News and heard nothing. If ABC did a podcast and got it out there for the general populace to listen to, I think that'll be a start. And then, of course, I expect my colleagues to do further research on the grounding I've given them. I've broken the water, and now it's time to sort of really get down and look at policy and that sort of thing.
Well, I think good on you, John. Just Dr. John, is it Gillette or Gillette? Gillette.
I say Gillette, my dear. Thanks,
Gillette. Yeah, and while you're doing that, when you finish this, you'd need to do a PhD in the difficulty of doing a radio interview while running in a fun run.
Mate, I'm really fortunate. I said to Lee, I bloody hope he reads me when I'm on a downhill stretch, and I am.
All right. Good on you, John. Good luck. We'll keep talking about that, and I'll see you. I'll see you at the Empire Theatre if I can.
If you've got any mates in the system, like the guy who did the story on the broken neck bull rider or anything, just put a word in for me, will you, mate?
Well, there's a lot of doctors listening here, mate, I'll tell you.
Oh, that's good.
And, we'll put it out there, okay? Well, they're probably listening now. Dr. Ross, I know. Dr. Ross in Bathurst and our mate... Dr. Mark and our mate in Gunnedah, and they're all over the place, mate. And Brucey Giddos, Chris Giddos, sorry.
I'm running with my son, who's a big bloke. He's making the effort. He's dropped 20 kilos, and he said, put a word in for me, will you, mate, and tell Macca to play our favourite song, Lover Please, by Macca.
All right, okay. We'll bring it to Toowoomba. Good on you, mate.
Okay, mate. Cheers. See ya.
See ya, bye. Rodney's in Coolemon. Coole. G'day, Rod.
How you going?
I'm all right, mate.
That's good. Yeah, I just thought I'd give you a cooey and tell you what we're up to today and tomorrow.
We're interested. Yeah. What are you up to?
Yeah, well, we're part of the grain collection team for the Sydney Royal Easter Show for the Southern District. So I'm doing a trip down into the Riverina today to visit some mates and pick up some grain samples, and we'll bring them home and clean them up ready for presentation at the show.
Rodney's talking about the Royal Easter Show at Sydney, which it's probably one of the biggest shows. And its district exhibits are always been, to my way of thinking, even when I was a little kid, just wonderful. And you see, and there's all the displays, wonderful displays of wool and seeds and grains and rapeseed and all sorts of stuff and barley. It's just wonderful, Rodney, and more power to you. The only thing I noted last time or the time before, I'm not sure, was that Southeast Queensland's disappeared because they found it too hard, I think, because there's a lot of work, as you would know, and you can let people know the work that goes into doing these big displays of all the produce, grains and pumpkins and wool and all sorts of stuff all over the place and sugar cane. And it's a big job, Rodney.
Oh, it is. Look, and there's a fair team of us that do it. And for the four districts that, like in New South Wales, that contribute, we cover just, well, anything that you can think of that's agriculturally produced. We have some element of that in the displays in the dome. And, so anyway, today's, pedal to the metal to get some, these grain samples collected up. And so we're in Coolerman now, but we're heading out to, Collyamberley, Drewldry, Finlay, Tokemall, down to Corowa and do a loop back up, probably back up through Wagga and back to my home at Young.
I've never had the joy. I think it'd be the joy of growing a field of wheat or barley or something. Now, I remember talking to my uncle years ago, and he said, I think this is one of the best fields of, you know, best crops I've had forever. You know, and he'd been growing wheat since he was a, you know, so the joy I think of when you go around and see people and they. The pride they have in their whatever they've grown, barley and wheat and things like that, is just it's a wonderful thing to behold.
Oh, it is, and some tremendous people that contribute you know, give us their produce to take down and clean up. Some of it goes for judging. Other samples are used up on the displays, and then of course. A heck of a lot of the colour that you see in the displays of the four courts are just all the colour is all different grains, apart from pumpkins and wool and all the rest of it. But a heck of a lot of the background colour you see in things are different grains that are gathered and cleaned and presented.
And in this world where we're tied down to, my guest is tied down to mobile phones and stuff, I just regret it all the time. We're in front of screens. When you see something of the natural world made of an insect crawling up a spike on a xantharia or a whole, I love seeing all those grains they have at the shows, you know, and the different, as you say, the different colours. But when you see things from the natural world, it's reaffirming. You think, well, yeah, the world's in a bloody mess, but things still grow.
It all keeps you grounded and you're back to basics all the time.
Yeah, wheat doesn't say, oh, I can't grow today, I'm doing something. No, they just, animals and plants just do what they've always done. They always build a nest and have eggs and stuff, so it's... It's very grounding. It's a lovely thing, Rodney. Will I see you at the show, Rodney? Will you be around there?
Yes. Yep. We'll be there.
Are we going to the Sydney show, Kel? We are on a Thursday. Is that right? I think, was it the 2nd of April? I can't remember. I think it's the 2nd. Is that a Thursday? I'm not sure. But anyway, I'll come out another day too and say good day, Rodney, because I'd love to.
Yeah. No, it's terrific. Yep.
All right, mate. Good luck. And happy collecting.
Yeah, good on you. Okay, thanks. All the best.
See you, mate. Bye. My guest this morning is Georgia. We call her Georgie. Georgina Topp. She works here at the ABC in the technical area, and she's just come back from
Bormio.
Bormio,
Italy.
In the Alps from the Winter Olympics. All sorts of things, and it was cold there, and snow and ice, and all things nice, and lots of people. A great thing to do with your work to be sent overseas and do whatever, but I want Georgia to tell you about Italy and what it was like. What was it like? What was your impression? What stood out to you when you went from good old Australia with the cost of living through the roof when you lobbed in Italy and Bormio?
Oh, well, specifically, actually talking of economics, it was actually a lot cheaper to eat in Italy. Like, you know, just going out for breakfast, you could get a croissant and coffee, for like, I don't know, I'm going to say $6. Like, it was really quite, I'm going to say everything was about 30% cheaper than Australian prices for food. And also, the food quality is excellent. Like, the Italians love food and they eat really well and they just wouldn't put up with a bad meal, you know. So all the food is just wonderful.
And that's the whole thing, because you see when you see a cooking show or something, and you know it's the way they are. They're into it, you know.
Totally.
And there is nothing. I've tried to work out what life's all about, but one thing I know it's about is to eat well. I mean, occasionally you have to have, you know, you have to dumb down and stuff like that. And I'm not saying go out and stuff. You can have a nice meal at home, or sometimes you don't feel like eating or whatever. You just have a bit of toast or something like that. But nice food is the thing of life. And the Italians, obviously, and the French seem to know that too. And pockets of people. But look, I don't know. Food's expensive here in Australia.
It is.
And it's going up. And yeah. I'm just... amused and bemused about the cost of living and the cost of food, because that affects everybody. Not and there's lots of people where we live in Australia who are, I think the stat was 175 billionaires in Australia, just in Australia.
Mm.
Billionaires, you know, and people used to talk, oh, a millionaire. Now everyone's a millionaire because if you're not a million, if you've got a house, they're all worth a million. So the cost of food there was, you reckon, about 30% cheaper.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I was eating out all the time, I guess, because I didn't have anywhere to cook. But yeah, the cost of food was definitely cheaper, and just so much better. And people really care about the food. Like you know, go into patisserie and people are making everything on site there, and just really delicious and varied food.
We don't do that here because most of you go into a place here and it's all in a little bain-marie and it's there and it's all been prepared, you know, 3-4 hours ago. I don't know, maybe that's cheaper or something. The cost of living and the cost of running a business and all that sort of stuff must be horrendous for people. I mean, and I'm sure people are in business and they've, you know, they've started a coffee shop and, you know, and I'm sure the rents go up and the cost of electricity's up and everything they do in their life is up. And inflation, you know, they say deflation is worse than inflation. I'm not sure but I know what inflation's like because we're living through it now. And I can't remember the time when Keating was treasurer or prime minister and there was 15 to 18%. But they'll have to do something about it. I don't know what they do. But I think the only solution to inflation is to stop spending. And they'll have. They used to talk. I remember they used to talk about a credit squeeze and things like that. And so things are just wound back. I'm not sure. So what else did you? Was it expensive to stay in places, or you were paid for? I suppose.
Yeah, I had my accommodations paid for, so I can't really comment on that. But no, I just feel like the standard of living is quite good. You know, possibly better than Australia. And it's just the beautiful, yeah, the town I was in was just a beautiful old town. It was, you know, the main square was, was, you know, more than 1,000 years old, you know, cobblestone streets and lots of old Catholic churches. And
how did you navigate the language, apart from buongiorno?
Yeah, most people could speak some English. I tried to learn a bit of Italian before I left, so, you know, just a lot of hand gestures and pointing. So, figure it out.
They're big on that, aren't they?
Yeah, and people are so friendly as well, like really warm and wonderful. So they just always want to help. And, yeah, it was just wonderful.
Exciting for a little town like Bormio, I suppose.
Yeah, they really embraced the Olympics.
Yeah, wouldn't you?
You know, they're very proud of their town and, you know, their main square, they'd set up a big screen and had some cultural events there. And, yeah, it was beautiful. And it was a little bit more kind of, because it was quite near the Swiss border, it was a bit more sort of Swiss chalet looking. It was still Italian, but, you know, it just had that sort of touch of Switzerland.
So it's up in the Alps, so it's a fair way from, say, Rome, places we know.
It was about 3 hours north of Milan.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, quite north.
So, and you were there for a couple of weeks. What a great experience. What a great experience. You'll remember
wonderful.
That.
Yeah, definitely. It's wonderful.
You're becoming a world traveller. a world traveller. And that's a lovely thing. I'll have to go to this Bormio. it sounds like a lovely – people say when you go to Italy or somewhere or France, you need to go to the countryside, and I suppose that's the same in Australia too, although it's different here. There's a lot more people in Italy and France than there are in Australia, so our countryside is less populated, but you never know. So you'll a bit hard to come back to Australia, I suppose, now, is it?
Big change in temperature, yeah.
So we'd be about zero, because it's – have they ever had the Winter Olympics there before, or they, because there wouldn't be that many places in the world where you can have a Winter Olympics, would there? I mean, Switzerland, the French Alps, the Italian Alps, and Switzerland, I suppose, and up in Colorado, Aspen, or somewhere like that, and Japan. I suppose that's where they have, but you don't have them sort of south of the border, if you know what I mean.
You
couldn't have one in Australia. I suppose you could have them in New Zealand. I'm not sure, but. You've got to have a big area because it's...
And also the associated infrastructure. And I think with the Winter Olympics, it usually seems to be a bit more spread out, whereas the, you know, Summer Olympics, it's usually in a, you know, concentrated in a big city.
Mm.
because of the nature of the events, I guess this one was spread out between sort of north around Milan and north of Milan, and also in the Cortina area, which is to the east.
That food sounds lovely. Did you have things like spag bol and just a...
Lots of pizzas.
And the pizzas different to ours? I mean...
Yeah, the all wood-fired pizzas with the big puffy borders and, you know, just delicious cheeses and, yeah, it was
Stop
wonderful.
It. Yeah. I'll have to go there. That sounds... So how do you get the fly to, what, Rome or something?
Fly to Milan. Milan's an international airport, and then it's a three-hour trip north, so... By car or bus or some method.
Yeah, it'd be hard to get used to getting back to work here. Was your work difficult there over there, or was a big team, I suppose, from all over the world helping?
Yeah, and it's just it was really busy, I guess, especially in the initial setup period. But once the Olympics get going, you're sort of just more in a holding pattern, keeping it all going. So, yeah.
Okay, well, lovely to talk to you and lovely to see you. You got a couple of days off, have you? Or
no? Back in tomorrow.
Oh, really? Dear, oh, dear. Thought you'd get a few days off to jet lag. Was there a lot of people on the plane coming home? They used to say there was not many going over but lots coming back, but that's changed. There's a lot going all the time now, isn't there?
Yeah, the planes were pretty full both ways, so I flew via Singapore and it was a pretty good flight, but, yeah, full.
Okay, Georgina Top, great to talk to you. Thank you. And Georgina bought us a little thing of chocolates and little biscuits and stuff. They take care with everything, don't they? Food.
It's
not just thrown out there, but you can tell they just look at my lovely, mom, it's the meatballs. They care about it. Whereas sometimes here it's just, it's whatever. So I'm going to go. Bread's the stuff of life. Thanks, Georgina. G'day, this is Macca.
Hello, Macca. It's Bob from Albion Park near Wollongong here, mate.
G'day, Bob. Doug.
Macca.
Bob, yeah, Bob. Sorry. Yeah, go on.
I want to comment on discussion earlier about the women over 55 being more active.
Yeah.
Golf is a wonderful game, and I play golf on a Friday, but I've got to wait for the women's comp to finish first. And there's a lot of elderly ladies there. But, Macca, that's on a small, lovely course up at Russell Vale. And when I play at other courses, I don't see the same happy crowd of elderly ladies playing. And I think it's because the course is smaller and there's sufficient toilets on site. Now, this is one of the problems with the golf. It could attract more elderly men and women if they had more toilets on the course. Because as you'd realise, or probably parents, that as you get older, you need more comfort stops.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'd never thought of that. But, you're probably right. And that's the same with anything, I suppose. Going to the theatre or something where it's a long, long movie or a long play or something like that, I suppose it's the same thing happens, mate.
Theatres have their toilets, but golf is one of those sports where they do have the activity to play either by yourself or with a group of friends.
Yeah.
And I was also just wanting to mention, Macca, that I attended the Combined Pension and Superannuation Association meeting in Dapto here last Thursday, and they were advised that to apply for grants. Now, grants is one way organisations can have these facilities built on golf courses.
Sounds like a good idea, Bob, to me.
Yeah, well, some years ago I wrote to the Wollongong Council, but the person sort of poo-pooed the idea. But I think, this should be pressed if we're really concerned about getting older people to be more active.
Well, Bob, I think it's a great point. I'd not thought it, not, I suppose, because I'm not a golfer, but... Yeah, anyway, I don't know. They probably don't want to disfigure their golf courses, if you know what I mean, Bob. But they could have...
They've got plenty of room, mate. They've got plenty of room.
Yeah, and they could put them behind bushes and, grow some bushes and stuff like that, or just have them little demountables or something like that. I don't know. But
that's right. There are small blocks, and, as you travel along the highway, they have toilets along the highways these days.
Little rest stops and stuff, comfort...
Yeah, rest stops. That's right.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Bob. Good on you.
Okay, well, cheerio, Macca.
Thanks very much, mate. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, G'day, Macca. It's Paul from Northmead.
Hi, Paul.
How are you, Macca? Wow, what a morning of listening.
Thank you.
You spoke about Bormio, and that's the extreme north of Italy, which is where my mother is from. And sadly, Mum passed away last year. But you triggered so many memories for me. And my mother was approached by the Mitchell Library to write a book about their generational exchange on coming to Australia, because my great-grandfather came to Trentham, Victoria, ended up in Lithgow owning the general store in Main Street. And my grandfather was born in 1912, went back. The whole purpose of them coming to Australia was to try and buy back the family home in northern Italy that they'd lost. My great-great-grandfather had squandered it. But anyway, I'll get straight to the point.
Yeah.
My great-grandfather actually succeeded. He met someone in Sydney, bought back the family property. My mother was born in Italy and just before the war. And my grandfather was interned in a prisoner of war camp because he was Australian. And all these memories. Anyway, they ended up in Australia again. Mum wrote a book. She was approached by the Mitchell Library wanting to know why did we leave Australia when we were so prosperous. But just so much that you said. Mum, the manners bit, I'll end on this one. I went to school in Strathfield, and I remember at 10 years old, having a sleepover at my friend's house, and I'd eaten enough, but I won't say the name, but the lady, the mother of my friend, insisted I have some more rock melon and ice cream. And I said to her, consequently, I said, no, thank you. I've had elegant sufficiency.
Yeah.
Now, all my friends at the table looked at me like I had two heads, but that was my mother.
Yeah, that's my mother too. Elegant sufficiency was, I don't know. It might have been out of a movie or something, Paul. I don't know, but yeah, it was a lovely talk to Georgina Topp, who was in here earlier this morning about Italy, and the thing that came out of it for me was how people care about their food. And I know we live in this fast society, but I suppose in a country, but I can just imagine walking into the shop and there's some lady up the back mixing some pasta and making a pizza and just, you know, kneading some dough and all that sort of stuff. That just, whereas tins here, I know people are in a hurry, but you just have a big case and there's all stuff there that's been made for ages. And
I've got to say that you're bang on this, because in each part of Italy has its own cuisine, but right where you're talking about, Valtellina up north, right where Bormio, the traditional meal there is not what you'd get in down the bottom of Italy. It's called polenta taragna, and which is a polenta made out of buckwheat, and they make it with cheese, and they serve it with venison. And it is a real traditional dish, and you can only get it in Bormio. You can't get it anywhere else.
Now, Paul, are you going back to Italy anytime soon? Because can you take me?
I am.
Can you take me? Let me know. Is it worth
the bags?
I've never been overseas. Never been anywhere. I've been to New York. But can you?
A bit of trivia as well. You said that you didn't know whether they had any ski events up there. In 1984 or 1985, they hosted the Ski World Championships.
All right.
And in Australia, they actually, you're going to love this, in Australia they had all of the delegates from, you know, Crams Montana and all of the other countries. The Italians rented out a restaurant for 2 weeks in Surrey Hills. Now, wait till I tell you this. They bought, I think, a pallet of wine, 3 chefs, and for 2 weeks they, and the reason I know this is because I was a designated driver. The Minister of Tourism came as well. And I was a designated driver for my parents because, you know, we were connected with that region of Italy. And you know what? my God, they partied like there was no tomorrow.
That's lovely. Now, listen, is it worthwhile going there like in winter? I mean, I don't do cold real well, but...
yeah, look, it is extraordinarily cold. If you're a skier, go.
Yeah, no, I'm not a skier. No, I don't. No, I'm
summer.
Not scared. Yeah, I might go in February or something like that. End of winter, maybe. Maybe. Paul, great to talk to you, mate. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Yeah. Hello, Macca.
G'day.
Malcolm here from Latrobe in Tasmania.
Hi, Malcolm.
Macca, you were talking about inflation and we have to stop spending back before 9.
Yep.
Just sit back and wait. A very short time with.
Sorry, where are
AI.
You? What are you? Are you travelling, Malcolm?
Yes, I'm travelling in to Burnie to a rally against Mariners Link.
All right. Keep talking. You just dropped out a bit. I hate calls that drop out. So, but anyway, keep going.
Yeah. So what I was just going to say is, with inflation first, and these data centres and AI. You wait a few months, there's thousands of people being put out of work in Australia as we speak because of AI. Where's all the money going to come from for people to spend and create inflation? There's a question for you to look into a bit more, but we're going to have a major social and economic disaster here in Australia with AI and data centres shortly. But, Macca, I'm driving to Burnie to a rally against Mariners Link. Mariners Link is a $5 billion power cable being proposed to be built from Tasmania to Victoria.
Mm.
It is, in my 63 years in Tasmania, it is the worst economic and environmental decision that's been made in my lifetime. It is just the biggest scam out, Macca, and Tasmania is paying 17.5% of that Mariners Link. Tasmania is in a financial mess, and its own Treasury Department last week, Macca, said that if Tasmanian government continues on its trajectory, by 2040, we will be $146 billion in debt, and we will have to spend 50% of our revenue just servicing that debt. We've already got stretched hospitals, stretched schools. Our roads are in a mess. Macca, it is disaster.
And that's mirrored around Australia, and we've got a lot of people coming in and hospitals, and I don't know, you know, our mate this morning said, I've been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for a hip replacement. And they said, oh, you're in a lot of pain, you'll have it in 3 months. I don't know how they keep up with that. You keep bringing lots of, it should, I like immigration. I like the people that I know live in my life that come from other countries. It's wonderful, but it needs to be measured. It needs to be measured.
That's right.
And
100%, Macca. And all I'll say, I'm not saying what political colour I am, but the rise of one nation is a direct result of what you just talked about, immigration and that sort.
Now, Malcolm, this rally, Mariners, where's that on today?
In Burnie.
In Burnie, all right.
Midday, and it's trying to stop this madness. We had Electric Eric was our premier back in the 50s
Electric
and 60s.
Eric, yeah.
And he built all the hydro dams for cheap power for Tasmanians and to attract industry here. And now our government, Eric Reese would be rolling in his grave, Macca, if he knew what this government was doing today, trying to flog all our power off to the mainland.
Malcolm, good luck. Will they get a big crowd there for that rally, or is it a big talking point in Tassie?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Like, you've got Christine Milne, Craig Garland, Tabitha Badger, Wade Rockliffe, you know, some bloody good speakers, Macca, there today. And if we listen to Bruce Mountain, you know, he's an economist, energy economist from Victoria, he's saying this is madness. Absolute madness.
All right, Mel. Good on you.
Macca.
Good on you, mate. Good luck.
Thanks, mate. Bye.
See you. Bye. Well, kids. lot of interesting things. Too many. The Italian golf club is playing. I thought it was amazing. In Victor Harbour today, they've got the Italian golf. Italians from all over Adelaide go and play golf, which is great. Bruno is a doctor. Told us you need to get injected for measles. It should be no brainer. You should just do it. Professor Anne Tiedemann came in to talk about ageing, and I've got lady wants that number. I'll try and find it in a minute. Rodney's collecting samples for the Easter show. All sorts of things. Morgan, Leroy was in Morgan, sorry, and it was pouring rain. A lot of rain about. Take care if you're out in that pouring torrential rain. It's the monsoon. We spoke about the monsoon. Andrew was heading back to Melbourne from the World Finns sailing competition for people all over the world. That was on Moreton Bay for the last 7 or 8 days. All sorts of things. It's been really nice this morning and really interesting. Talking about all sorts of things, and Daryl was in a fun run for kids in Cambodia. Lucy in Port Pirie. Matthew in Jerusalem. Chris was going to Ushuaia, wherever. And, if you see, I don't know how many satellites are up there, but we live in this amazing time, and it's just nonsense. Elon Musk. And who was the other dude that said in a couple of decades there'll be people living in outer space? What was his name? If you read about the stats about what happens to you when you're weightless and all that sort of... No, it wasn't Elon Musk. It was one of those other billionaires. There's only about 400, 500 billionaires. Why haven't you got it at the click of your fingers, Kel? Thanks for your company this morning. Keep the cards and letters coming. Love your work. Stay tuned on ABC Local Radio. Always a wonderful morning. There you go. I hope you enjoyed our highlights package. If you want the full Monty, listen in every Sunday morning from 5:30 till 10 and tune into Australia. If you see me on the road, stop and say g'day. Contact me at macatracks@gmail.com. Talk to you Sunday.